Take a break from your busy schedule and join Harold Sala for Guidelines for Living.
When God asked Abraham to give his son as a sacrifice on Mount Moriah, he complied without questioning God as to why he asked this most unusual thing, especially when the boy had been a gift from God when they were childless. As Abraham approached Moriah, he turned to the servants accompanying him and said, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you." Notice he said, "We will worship, and then we will come back." Abraham's reference to worship is the first mention of that word in the Bible, though certainly it was not the first time man worshiped God. But here's the question. Who taught Abraham to worship? Or who taught Adam to worship, for that matter, and what did these men do when they did worship? The circumstances cry out that worship was their response to God, not something which they were taught. It was something intrinsic, something spontaneous, an instinct which came naturally. It was part of the DNA of the soul, and just as a suckling newborn nurses at the breast of his mother, so it seems the heart of man strives to reach out to God to reestablish spiritual wholeness and health through worship. A.W. Tozier once asked, "Why did Christ come? Why was he conceived? Why was he born? Why was he crucified? Why did he rise again? And why is he now at the right hand of the Father?" The answer to all these questions is, in order that he might make worshipers out of rebels, in order that he might restore to us again the place of worship we knew when we were first created. End quote. What can we learn from Abraham and history itself? More than you might think. First, the Hebrew word that Moses used, telling us that Abraham worshipped, was a word which meant to bow, to stoop or bend, to kneel, to prostrate yourself before someone. That word was used not only in reference to God, but it described what a person did when he bowed before a king. Ancient manuscripts tell how someone would kiss the feet of a king or the hem of his garment. Both Persians and Greeks did this, thereby acknowledging that the authority of the one before whom they bowed came from God. It always included the posture of humility. In Roman days, it included the practice of kissing the hand of the one you worship, something still observed in some cultures. When he was an old man and he couldn't kneel, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each one of Joseph's sons and worshiped as he leaned on the top of his staff. The Bible tells us of men who worshiped stones and pagan gods and idols carved of stone and wood. It used the same word for those who even worshiped Satan. It was used of those who bowed down before Jesus Christ and worshiped him, not only when he was an infant in the manger of Bethlehem, but in his ministry as men and women prostrated themselves before him in worship. I, for one, believe that we need to rediscover what worship is about. Far more than singing a few songs, listening to announcements which remind us of commercials, then hearing a 30-minute message which often keeps our attention for only a few minutes before our thoughts begin to stray. There is value in worship, which we need to rediscover. And in learning to worship, we absorb the resources of God's grace and blessing. A pediatrics nurse will tell you that while most infants don't really have to be taught to nurse, nonetheless, some have to be taught. So is it with worship.
You've just heard Guidelines for Living. For more practical and inspirational messages, visit guidelines.org. If you find our devotionals helpful and would like to share them with others, consider supporting our ministry with a donation. Again, that's guidelines.org. Thanks for listening to Guidelines for Living.